Welcome to Spirals, an effort in preventing trauma by talking about difficult topics. The content may be triggering. If you have any questions or comments, please send them to spirals@unicornvoice.com. After this episode, you may hear one of Tanya's original songs or weird demo. In this episode, I'm talking to my brother, Frode. We grew up in a household with violence and a lot of mental health issues. The content is divided into two parts. This is part one. Hello.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Well, it depends where you are at the moment.
How are you?
I don't know. I think I'm good, hopefully.
That's the usual answer.
Yeah, nobody
all these
knows.
Years. How are you? What do you mean? Should I feel? How do I do that?
I don't feel. I think.
So this is my brother.
It is.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
What can I say? My name is Frode. I'm 50-something.
Are you trying to be anonymous?
I should.
That's going to be very hard.
I'm going to be anonymous after this. Yeah, I should be anonymous. Yeah, definitely. Well, there's nothing more to say. Well, my background is a lawyer. I'm working in a tech company. I have a huge passion for what I'm doing. Tech, legal. And I still have a huge passion for law, which is my background. Yeah. So, but I don't practice any law anymore. Thank God.
I thought you did some in your job or with the other company you used to have.
No, I've quit that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice. I know
I start things, I stop things.
But I know you have a big passion for work. It's fascinating. You're one of those people who tell me, oh no, it's the weekend. It's like the opposite of everyone else.
Absolutely. And because working is the most important thing in life. For me.
Yeah.
For some people, it's not relevant. But I can understand that working is not relevant and interesting if you don't own the stuff you're working with.
Well, maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be for some people.
But this is your passion.
Yeah.
This is work.
Yeah, this is work.
So I'm considering this work today.
It's just
not paid
work. Well, maybe someday.
I can give you a bottle of wine.
Oh, yes. Finally. First payment. But this is very interesting because if we start right off the bat, right there, where you said, that's important to me. If we go back a few years, that's a big change in your life to add those two words to me, because you haven't been used to doing that.
No, I've
you
learned
that. You should just tell, this is how it is. And I think for some people now already know my background, and we don't have the same background, even though we grew up in the same house. And I think that's where the biggest change in our relationship came, is one day in your kitchen when you said, or I said, if we had a drone in our house when we were kids and it filmed everything, it would still, even if that's like a factual thing, you have a film, it's showing everything that's going on, we would still have three as siblings. We're three siblings, we should say that. And we would have three completely different experiences of that film because we're three people. And I remember you were like looking at me with your eyes like, huh? So I think that's like a really big thing to realize that we are different people. And we have that different experience. And you and I, we grew up in this house. Isn't that weird? Right where we're sitting right now.
This was actually my room. Yeah, this was my room.
Oh my God.
Oh, I have some memories from here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go into those.
You don't
Maybe.
Have to.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, you don't have to. I don't. That's a big thing. Like, we don't know exactly what this is going to be, this episode. And we don't know what parts we're going to publish, or I just want it to be a conversation. And it's not usual for us to have conversations in English, but it's not that unusual since I'm married to an American. So we had, you know, experience speaking English together in like family settings and stuff. But and I know from we were younger you used to like speaking English, but we're doing this in English because I don't know that many people who does this. sit down with a sibling and talk about something that we're kind of still in the middle of. Does that make sense to you?
Absolutely not, but let's try it.
Yeah, because if you listen to podcasts, a lot of those podcasts that I hear, or not just podcasts, but a lot of those people out there who are talking about their childhood, they talk about their siblings, maybe they have a conversation with their siblings, they've kind of already resolved it, and then they go talk about it. But in a way, you and I, we're still a work in progress. As a family, this is kind of new that we're discussing, we call each other, talk about our lives. We haven't done that for more than just a few years.
That is a very good point. Yeah,
so this is kind of still raw. I'm a little nervous. I wish I had that televagal box that could show you what I'm feeling right now, because just like I think maybe you can recognize this, I become an expert, I think at least for most people, to hide my emotions. Like if I went on stage or did something, people would say, oh, you looked like you just love being up there. And nobody knew that I was dying right before I went on stage. I thought I was going to die, like literally. So a lot of stuff that I do, I pushed myself really hard to not make it show or to reveal that I'm actually really, really scared.
But I think that's outside the family, because for me,
yeah,
it's quite obvious what you feel.
Yeah. Okay.
It
good.
Is definitely, yeah. And people say about me that one of my biggest problems is that they can just look at my face and they know what I'm thinking right away. I can see that you're kind of nervous. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought when I said yes to this.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to be nervous.
Yeah.
But I'm actually not.
Oh, that's good.
And that's a huge change in my life. You started this talk with that I have changed.
Yeah.
And I have.
Yeah.
Because after 3 years of therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, that works.
Yeah.
And that changes you in many ways. Yeah. And if I hadn't done that.
Yeah.
Then I would still be the same Frode as you knew 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Who would say, that's how it is.
Yeah.
So now I'm always adding, I think, I believe. I'm not sure if I mean it. I don't know. Well.
It's okay. It's a practice.
It's a practice.
And we are very, I think we're similar that way. Because I don't think I always mean it either.
Oh. That's interesting. That we actually not always say what we mean.
Yeah.
Because everyone is like that.
Imagine in a big negotiation, like a financial negotiation, the lead negotiator comes in and, oh, I'm really nervous today. What if we don't get the price that we want, you know? And you guys are a little bit scary and, oh, I'm feeling intimidated. How would the world look if people didn't show up in their power suit and be all like...
And you mean if they were honest?
Yeah, if they were really honest.
Actually, I think that is something which is about to change. I had an experience just a few months ago where we were discussing, negotiating. Then they said, maybe you should go out and think about this and we'll meet back here in here again in like 15 minutes. So we went out of the room, my colleagues and I, and we had a discussion about something totally different, and they never came out and called us back. So after a long while, we went back to the room, we knocked on the door and said, yeah, is it time to go back again? And they said, yeah, we're waiting for you guys.
Oh.
Because you were going to think about this. And I said, no, you were going. Then we had a very honest discussion. That was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I've never experienced that before. What has changed with humanity, and especially in our part of the world? Because now we're talking about our part of the world. I have no idea how things work in Asia or how things work.
Well, you have some.
In the US,
I have some
idea. Yeah. But it's a huge difference. If we look at how humanity has changed and how we have changed the way we live for the past 10, 30, 50, and 100 years ago, why do 30% of all kids in school today have mental issues? That is very interesting.
Yeah.
They probably had that also 100 years ago.
Well,
probably
that's what
maybe
I think.
50% or 100% had mental issues. But what has changed? If we look at the way we lived 100 years ago, we had to get food and we had to get a roof over our heads.
Yeah.
Today, everybody gets that. I mean, there's a government here, in our part of the world.
Yes, we have to
be. The government is taking care of you. That means that everybody has time to have mental issues. That's why they are more visible today, I think. And I mean, can we do anything about this? Yes, we can. We can make people hungry again. But I don't think we're going that way.
God, that's very funny.
Yeah, but that's the only way to change it.
So you think you can make people hungry again, but I think we can do what you're doing. You're doing it right now. You are changing the world by taking care of the garbage. I call it, we have a lot of garbage in our system, and you're turning that into non-suffering for other people, because when we walk around with a lot of crap in our system, we create suffering for other people. It's just unavoidable. You can't be a person that had a miserable life and feel miserable and not make others feel miserable too.
Of course. We all do this. The question is, where are we taking out the anger?
Exactly.
I have some very bad... I'm doing a lot of bad stuff. For example, I'm trying to quit screaming in traffic. Road rage. Not just inside the car, because that, I mean, that's a problem for my kids and my wife, and that's not good. The first time I really realized I had a problem was I was driving on the highway and I had this woman in front of me driving so slow. And it got me so angry that I took out on the left side, I rolled down my window in the middle of the highway and start screaming at her. And then I understood I have to do something about this.
Yeah.
Because this is not healthy. That's all the garbage you're talking about.
Yeah.
I had another experience just a short time ago. We were in a very expensive restaurant and the bill was wrong. I didn't handle that very well. I kind of screamed at the person working there and I was very angry. And I told all the other guests before I left, that you have to be careful in this place because they're stealing your money. That's not good. I know I have to do something about this, but I still do it.
I can't stop it. Picture that in a way, because one thing is how we behave at home, but to scream in the restaurant. I mean, I've been with you to places before, but I've never seen that side of you outside of our home. Especially in this home, you know, but usually, so I didn't know you did that actually. One thing is screaming in your car at other people. I just didn't know you were screaming in a restaurant at a person.
Or in a shop when something goes wrong, okay. Or if they don't, I mean, I can get very annoyed if I go into a shop and they don't have what I'm supposed to buy.
Yeah.
I know this is not, this is just a big part of my garbage.
Yeah, but you see it. Yeah,
and I need to do something about it. But it's going to take a lot of time because all people have a lot of anger in themselves. And the question is, how are you actually going to get that anger out?
Yeah, it's like a human, somebody said to me, we all have a certain amount of violence in us, every single human being. So that's what you're talking about, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's healthy. To show anger, but you have to think about how you're showing it.
Yeah, how you release it.
Because you can't be physical. You shouldn't scream at people. Yeah. And then, I mean, that's maybe my biggest change over the past 25 to 30 years.
Yeah.
Because I started out being angry with my kids and my wife.
But is that how it started? So...
Being angry with you.
No, but let's go. Yeah, because let's go all the way back. And I just wanted to say one thing before we do that, because you were talking about how the world has changed, you know, how 30% of kids, or what you said in school, I don't know this number, are now...
I don't know the exact numbers, but it's in the papers all the time.
And I just wanted to say that we had a grandfather who, the story I heard is that when he was 5 years old, he was sent to another farm to work. Now, I don't know if this is actually true, but I know at that time, this wasn't so unheard of, because his mother had, there was no husband. We don't know our great grandfather on our father's side. And there were four siblings, and the lady was a maid at a farm, and she didn't really have a lot of money to support herself as a single mother for four kids. So if we go back and look at that part, it's not that long ago where nobody asked that little kid, hey, how do you feel about going to another farm working? You know, and even our father's generation, I don't think anyone asked him. So that's what I think is one of the new things. Like you said, we have time now to feel our mental suffering. And we also have come to a place where someone asks a kid, how do you feel? That didn't happen just one generation back. So yeah, I just wanted to kind of finish that thread, because that goes back to, like you said, when we were kids, and you said you started, it started with you screaming at your family. But what I know, what I've heard about you as a child, is that you were very kind. You were very helpful. The stories our mom has told me is that you would clean up in the house, you would wash, you would take care of me as a baby, you'd change my diaper. And you would try to do everything. And my thought is that you did these things to make it calm or quiet, or hope that you would resolve something. Many kids feel that sort of loyalty. I'm sure we had arguments and stuff, but I don't remember anything really bad happening between us until I was 20 years old. And we had a physical fight in the kitchen where my boyfriend at the time had to step in.
I can't remember this.
Yeah, you
actually, I can't remember anything. This is important.
Yeah.
Because my memories of my childhood is almost zero. I can't remember almost anything before I got married.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting. I'm trying to release these memories, and all my memories is normally related to, for example, photographs. I watched a photograph and I said, yeah, I can remember this. I can remember this cabin trip or the sail trip or whatever. But I mean, in general, so your example here, I have this, I can't remember.
Yeah.
You were 20.
And we were adults. So you were like 23, 24. Yeah. But
and we beat each other?
Yeah, I don't remember.
I beat you? This is strange.
I think we were fighting, and I don't know exactly what happened. So I'm not going to say who started or who did what, but I do remember you choking me up against the wall in the kitchen.
That sounds really bad.
It was really bad, and I don't remember how, I can't remember how it kind of ended. I know that my boyfriend at the time was there, and he kind of helped. We should call him. No.
I need to call your ex-boyfriend, yeah, definitely. Yeah,
hopefully he remembers, but it doesn't really matter, because the reason I'm saying this is that I don't remember much aggression up to that point, because, you know, our father was a very violent man, and he was a very angry man, how I remember him. And he physically attacked you once. I remember that. And that really made a big impression on me. That was way worse than I felt that anything. You know how you feel something has happened to you? To me, that was like watching my older brother get, I think he slapped you in the face because you used a derogatory term. The question is, when do you remember being really angry first? You're saying that was when you were married?
No, I was talking about my grown-up life.
Oh, okay.
Of course, so if we go all the way back, I mean, you mentioned our grandfather. Yes, it's correct. He was sent to a farm because his mother died. But he was taken care of until then. And the funny part of that story, which should be mentioned, is that the question is, who was his father?
Yeah, no, there's
that
a lot
is a
of
very cool story. Because his mother was a, what do you call it, a service girl?
Yeah, she was like a maid.
A
farm hand.
At a farm where there were people with a lot of money. And they had visits every year. From German, what do you call him? I don't know what
he was an emperor.
He was an emperor, that's
yeah,
correct.
The last and he emperor was, of yeah, Germany.
And he made a lot of girls pregnant in Trondheim at that time.
Voss, wasn't it?
I think it was in Trondheim.
I
I'm
heard
not
it was
sure.
Voss, yeah. But okay.
No, yeah. So, well, and what's interesting about that, and we can maybe come back to that later,
yeah,
is that this guy, this emperor, he had huge mental issues. He had severe mental issues.
Yeah.
So if that's genetic, I mean, it's no wonder we're here
screwed.
Today. Yeah, we're screwed. We're over.
There's a
so
lot.
So then,
stuff.
Of course, when he came to this farm, he was beaten every day for his whole. I mean, until he moved away from. I don't know how old he was then. Maybe 16.
But how do you know this?
This story. I think it was Grandma Farmor who told me this story.
Okay.
So he was beaten and beaten and beaten every day.
Wow.
And then he became an alcoholic.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then he was beating his kids, our father.
Yeah, I know.
And then our father, of course, maybe. But, I mean, I can't remember the story you were telling about when he was beating me.
Yeah.
This is, as I said, is not a part of my memory. Well, and I'm not going to try to recall those memories because I don't think that's healthy. If I was, maybe if I started, in some kind of therapy at 15 or 20, that would be meaningful, but I'm 53 years old. With the years I have
dead.
Left, I'm going to spend those years drinking wine, not thinking about my childhood.
Okay, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Because the brain and the body has a way of just not listening. If you say, you know what, I'm going to spend the rest of my life being happy. And then, you know, stuff just surfaces when you're ready to deal with it, I think. But so you, when you were a child, you were a person who took your anger and brought it on yourself. This is the way I see it, that you went internally with your anger. You didn't get it out. I was a child who would lay on the floor, scream and kick and throw shit and have fits. So I feel like we reacted differently to the same violence we had in ourselves or the same anger, or we had probably both a lot of anger. Do you feel like that would be a correct way to say it, or how did you feel about that?
It's a very difficult question to answer because I really don't know how I handled it because I can't remember.
Yeah.
But what I can say is that when I became older, I mean, from where I start remembering, of course, I had all this anger in me, and all this anger went. I mean, that's why I talked about the kids and my wife earlier, because I mean, that's where the anger came out. And I was very immature as a father. I was only 23 when I got the first kid, which is extremely early. And for many men, that's way too early to start getting kids because we are not mentally prepared for that. And then we got four of them. I hope I'm a very different father today than what I was at that time. How did I handle it? I don't know. As you say, maybe I just garbage collected it inside and kept it there. And even today, I have a lot of anger towards one. And we're probably not going to go into that discussion. But most of my anger.
To society and tax, let's try to avoid
exactly.
That.
That's where my anger goes. I mean,
you can have
all
a different podcast about taxes, and then
let's have a separate podcast on that. Yeah,
yeah, you can invite me as a guest, and
yeah,
we'll
I
see
can.
How that goes.
Yeah,
but yeah,
and it's
so,
going to be called The Communist and the Capitalist.
Yes, because that would pretty much well.
That pretty much sums up this.
I think I would say that I am also in a way a capitalist. I mean, I do. Like money, I like to have money, but I do. I'm not a person who holds on to it. I spend it, so I in that sense, I guess I'm more of a communist. But I had a different experience than you. Let's not forget, I got help. I was away from work for 8 years. I got tax money for 8 whole years in Norway to work on my problems. And you've never experienced that. So when I started working again and I had to pay 50% taxes because I made a lot of money, I really didn't feel bad about it because I felt like I already got that money, that service of society. I feel like I benefited from that, but I don't think you have ever gotten help or asked for help or, yeah.
That's a very interesting question. I actually have a concrete example on this because, as you remember, I fell off the roof some years ago.
Oh yeah, that's true.
And broke my heel and the foot, and today it's like in Norway you can get help.
Because
I have to have sometimes two different sizes on my shoes. That's expensive.
Yeah.
Which means that, but the Norwegian government, they will help you with this.
Yeah.
They would give you a certain amount of money every year.
Yeah.
So that you can buy good shoes.
Are you getting that money?
Do I do that? Absolutely not. It couldn't even. No, that would never happen.
Yeah.
I would never ask the government for anything. Yeah. That's until I, everybody can get sick.
Yeah.
So in my mind, the most, I'm not sure if I agree with you, because I mean, the most important parts of how we spend money in our welfare society is three things. It's healthcare, it's school, and it's infrastructure. And I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
Okay. It's very different things I have a problem with.
Yeah.
And we're not going into that today.
No, I'm very impressed that we actually moved away and you moved away from that in a very nice manner instead of digging our
heels. That's 3 years of therapy.
Yeah, that's really good. It's working. That sounded really condescending, didn't it? It's working. But
that is condescending.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So that anger, when do you remember? Because when you were like in your teenage years, do you remember it then? Having anger when you were out with friends, if you were drinking, partying, or were you mostly, because I remember you mostly as a happy dude those days, smiling, and because maybe it was like a newfound freedom for you. You could go out with your buddies, you would hang out on the weekends, you started sailing, doing different things. So I remember you mostly from that time as a happy person. Does that make sense to you, or you don't remember that either?
I think I was happy. What I can remember is I had the same anger, which we were talking about a few minutes ago, and which has been there for ages. It's been there since I was a teenager. So that I haven't thought about this. Actually, this is when it started.
Yeah.
I can remember that the worst thing I could meet was, we have a Norwegian word called rødstrømpe, which is kind of the Norwegian word for a feminist.
Yeah. It's a derogatory term, I guess.
And that was the worst thing I knew. And it really pissed me off. So that's correct. I haven't thought about that. It started when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
That is so strange.
When you started feeling angry?
Yeah. And I don't know why I was angry with them, but I have some ideas.
But maybe also, could that be a safe way? That if you find a place to be angry that's outside yourself and your own history and experience, because a feminist would be somebody that you hadn't met. We don't have them, you know, our mom's not a feminist, I would say. My grandma wasn't a feminist, on my mother's side. So we don't have a lot of experience in our family with women who were fighting for women's right and liberation. So it was kind of safe for you to be mad at them. Does that make sense? Or?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because then you don't have to touch on, oh my God, I'm mad at my dad or my life or my mom.
That is a very good point.
You know, we're going to try in this podcast to not be, you know, try to identify other people than ourselves. But when it comes to, this is how I see it. When it comes to my mom and dad, that is different because I'm talking about my childhood. So I'm allowed to talk about my childhood and how I experienced it without thinking that I'm have to protect my mom or dad. And when we were kids, our mom was very sick. You know, she was in and out of mental hospitals. And we have it on film from before, so it's not like a secret. I felt like you also, as the oldest boy, you were left with a lot of, when I look back at it now, you were very young and you were left with that experience. First time she went to a hospital after trying to kill herself, I was 14 and I had just experienced getting friends for the first time in my life. I was in a place where people liked me, boys liked me. It was a shocking experience for me. So I spent all my time outside this house. I was never home. And I snuck out at night. I spent time in another school in the daytime. I was skipping school a lot. But I felt like you were left as a 17-year-old. When you think about it now, you know, you have four boys, and you think about when they were 17 and they had that responsibility. How do you look at that today?
That is a very interesting question because I think, I mean, the episode you're referring to, that's actually something I think I can remember because we had a friend of mom's who actually helped me, and I can remember we went to the hospital, and when we came home, there was nobody here to take care of us. And I remember that I thought, okay, well, we have to just live like normal, make dinner. You were never home. I can't actually even remember what we were doing. I mean, either. Today, child services would have been here instantly.
Yes.
And they would have taken us out of here. That would have happened today.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually, even though our grandparents lived upstairs, they weren't here.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we had to take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's just plain crazy.
To me, though, when I look at the life that I had then, to me, that was wonderful. It was a breath. Like, finally, our dad was out of the house, because that was the whole thing. My mom said she wouldn't come back to the house until he had moved out. And this I remember, that I was alone with him when he was packing up his stuff. And I remember the cardboard boxes, and I remember he was very mad. And when I think about it now, what a horrible situation for a young person to be in.
You were here?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
No, I was here when he was packing. And I don't remember everything around it. I just remember he was so mad, and I tiptoed, you know, I walked on eggshells. And I didn't know what was going to happen.
Why didn't you go out?
I don't remember. I can't recall. But I have memories from when I was little. I was usually very good at learning people's body language and trying to protect myself. So when we were younger, he was sitting. I remember you have this image too of his feet on this foot stool, that he was sitting in the corner with his pipes.
Scissors and his pipes.
Yeah,
and
his, yeah. His what?
His scissors.
His
he
scissors.
Was always cutting his nails.
Oh, I can't remember. No.
Every day.
Really?
And he was picking his
toenails?
Nails. Yeah. No, his fingernails.
Wow. I don't remember that.
Oh, I remember this. That annoying sound. And I'm still I'm doing the same thing. I'm very annoying. Yeah. So
funny.
I'm well aware of it, but I can't stop it. It's like I read this article this morning about girls who are picking out their hair or their heads. Yeah.
Oh my
this
God.
Is there are so many people doing this.
It's like an OCD, maybe?
Yeah, it's an OCD. Oh. And men, I mean, we are putting our fingers in our beard. It's like there's a lot of different OCDs.
Yeah, I can't remember the scissors, but I remember his feet, and I remember in the living room we had a dining room table. I mean in a dining room. And I was sitting behind this dining room table a lot at night. And I was looking out, and I would sneak out of the house when my mom wasn't here. And I think it wasn't like bedtime. It was before bedtime, and I wasn't allowed to go anywhere. And I remember sneaking. I only remember one time he caught me in the stairs and grabbed me by the hair and dragged me back in the house. But I would sneak upstairs without him knowing. And I had to sneak, and it could take me probably 40 minutes to move so slowly that there wasn't a creak in the floorboard. Can you imagine that in this house?
That is impossible, actually.
Yeah. So that's why I'm saying that I think I learned to tiptoe around him. So I don't remember exactly what happened that day with the cardboard boxes. But other than maybe I felt like if I ran away, he'd find me, or, you know, I just had to be there.
But imagine if, what do you think would have happened if child services would have come and picked us up? Because you would have been put in a foster family. Your life would have changed totally overnight.
Yeah.
And I think you would probably have, I mean, your upbringing would be so totally different.
Yeah.
And I think maybe all of your anger, this would have been a huge problem.
Yeah.
I don't think that would have worked.
I have no idea. I think.
And where would we have been today?
Yeah. I mean, these are fantasies and hypotheticals, that's impossible. But you're right, it would have been very different. And because I feel that when I was 14 years old, when we got that freedom, that our mom was very lenient with us. She wasn't like someone who, you know, she told me when I had to be home. And for some reason, I kind of adhered to that because I thought I liked those boundaries that somebody said, you have to be home at 10 o'clock. But a lot of times she wouldn't know where I'd been. She didn't know what I was doing. I can only remember one time her and Beppe came to, our grandfather came to pick me up at a beach at night where we were drinking. And they both showed up and I was shocked. And in a way, I was thrilled. I was like, oh my God, they came to look for me. I was amazed because most of the time I would lie and make up friends that I slept over at and she didn't know them. And I would have my boyfriend call and pretend to be a dad.
How did they know where you were?
I was always in the same place. They always remembered in the spring or summer, we spent every single weekend there. And one time I'd been explicitly told to come home at the Nattisatnamai, it's night to our national day, our Independence Day, which is a huge celebrate or a party night for people in Norway, young people. And that night they came and got me and the next day I had to be home at 10. So, and I kind of enjoyed it to be sort of grounded. But anyway, that freedom in the house when my or our father wasn't here and I had friends now. For me, that time between 14 and before I moved out was glorious in a way. It was like a breath. I discovered so much newfound joy. That's why I've always felt like friends are like my family. They're so important to me because they were my first experience of joy in life, real joy. Like I can remember Friday nights, we would stand outside a store and get some older boy to buy us beer. And having that in the backpacks, you know, walking around with a clinking sound and knowing that anything could happen that night, it was, to me, that's the biggest joy up till date. That's why I always liked partying so much. And
that is very interesting because if child services had come, life would have been totally different. Yeah. Maybe not even in a good way.
Yeah, maybe not.
But I mean, we read about this every day. There are stories about people who sued the government because the government didn't do what they were supposed to do when they were kids.
Yeah. You want to sue?
Absolutely not.
Me neither.
No, I wouldn't spend my time doing that. I can't even imagine. I mean, if you are at a better place today than you were at that time, which most people probably are, why would you spend time on that?
Yeah,
because
I don't think most people are negative.
No, most people aren't. But because it's an extremely negative focus on your life. So I want to try to.
Maybe not for everyone. Maybe for someone to have that battle and fight for themselves and stand up for their childhood is a good battle. That's again, you know, different perspective. But for me, I have a good life. I'm not in a dire position, you know, when it comes to money. I have money. I have a place to live. I'm very fortunate. So I don't want to spend my time doing that. But there could be other people who have no future economically because they've so damaged they couldn't get out there and find a decent job. Maybe they have a lot of physical problems that cost them a lot of money. So I think it's a very complex thing.
Of course.
But I'm impressed, of course. I was waiting for you to go, everybody can work.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Maybe you're right. You haven't heard me say that. You don't hear me say that very often.
I'm shocked.
You're shocked.
Actually, I'm not shocked. I guess I've always hoped and wanted us to get closer. I've always really liked you as a person. I like to be with you. I think you're funny. I think you're inspiring in a way to be around. But you've also been scary. And we've had a lot of interactions that's been maybe unhealthy too with, you know, yelling at each other. But I feel like I've had my part in that. And I don't think I could see that before. Since I started, we could say that I started earlier than you to look into my past and to go to therapy, right? And I think I got a little bit snooty about it, you know? I was a little like, oh, I know better than you. You're stupid and I'm smart. And I was being kind of condescending about it towards you. I hope I don't do that anymore, but I'm pretty sure I did that. And that must have been also very provoking for you. Does that sound right?
That is absolutely correct.
Okay.
That is one of the things that really pissed me off. But I think that, I mean, if we look at the way we treated each other after 20, 25 years old time and up till just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
That was a very unhealthy relationship.
Yeah.
Extremely unhealthy.
Yeah.
Because we were fighting about absolutely everything. And of course, that's the aggression talking in both of us.
Yeah.
And I really didn't want to accept that I had to do changes. All people need to do changes.
Yeah.
But the question is, how deep are they, those changes going to be? And the worst thing is when other people tries to change you, which I think is what I experienced with you.
Yeah.
I experienced that you tried to change me.
Yes, I was trying to change everybody.
And that is the most annoying stuff I know. Whether it's your kids or your family or wife, I hate that.
Yeah.
If I have to change, I have to take care of myself. And I have to understand why I need to change. For example, the anger issues. I need to understand why I shouldn't scream at people in traffic, and why I shouldn't scream at people in restaurants or shops, and why I shouldn't...
And you're absolutely right. There's no way. You can't change another person. But I think it took me a lot of time to realize that. And I didn't realize that the changes that I was really working on were my own. Like, these were my own feelings. So it took me a long time to realize when we met and I got so mad at you that I want to rip your head off, then those were my emotions. They weren't yours. And I couldn't go around saying, well, you're creating these emotions. Of course you were annoying and you were triggering and provoking, but it was my emotions. And that took a long time to let that sink in. I have to deal with my own emotions. It's not the others that I can work on. And I'm still working on that because I still nitpick at people and, you know, pluck away.
Something most people, I don't think they actually, they're not conscious about this. Because you are alone responsible for your own actions.
Yeah.
At all time.
Yeah.
Because if we start to blame others for the way we react... And this is also something that has totally changed in my mind over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
Because I think a couple of years ago, I would think about this totally different. You could say it's a part of growing up, but it's kind of late in your 50s to start growing up.
Yeah.
But you can look at life different.
But we have grown up with people who never grew up. And isn't it better to start at 50 than to never start at all?
That is a very good point.
Yeah. I mean, at least for me, I can only make the choice for me. I want to make this change. But when it comes to, let's say, I feel like I was very lucky that our father died. That was a stroke of luck. I would not have been the same person today because my story, if I'd come out with my story when he was alive, you know, he would have probably denied it or there would have been a whole thing. I wouldn't been able to digest and analyze and go through everything the way I have today. But when I think about, you know, like our mother, she doesn't want to. And it took me till 6 months ago to realize that I hadn't forgiven my mother. I was shocked. I thought I'd forgave her way before I forgave my dad. So that's the oddest thing, that my dad sexually abused me and I was not mad at him as long as I was mad at my mom. And I think it's common because, like, your mom is your first love. She's the one that can... You know, when you're rejected in a way by your mom's love, that can hurt the most and take the longest to repair. But 6 months ago, I would say October of last year, now we're in April, was when I realized that if I'm going to live, I live in the same house as my mother, then I see her every day, then I'm going to have to either move out or I have to find a way to forgive her because it's not healthy for me or her that I keep picking and digging into her all the time. You know, little sly comments.
You do that?
Every day.
I didn't know.
Oh, I can't believe you didn't
know.
That's
interesting because I have just, I stopped doing this because it doesn't give any meaning in my life. But I mean, as you said, thank God he died.
Yeah.
Imagine if he were alive. I mean, know people.
We would have killed him.
Yeah, probably. We would have killed him.
Yeah, we would have been jailed.
And imagine, we know people who are in the same situation, but where the pedophile molester still lives.
Yeah.
And this create huge amounts of problems, not just for the person themselves, but for all people around them.
Yes.
And so this is a message for all of you out there who know this.
Yeah.
I think if you're in a situation like that, you need to start to get angry at the right people.
Yeah. I agree. Let's not get into that, though.
No, no, we're not going there. Yeah, that's is it allowed to say pedophile?
Well, you know, so that was the thing.
Or is that
an
illness?
My whole pedophile project that's coming up, but a pedophile is not a molester. A pedophile is just a person who has sexual thoughts of children. And
that's
they,
why I said pedophile, yeah. molester.
Yeah.
Because pedophile exactly. is just... But is that... That is one of the questions I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
Is that a mental illness? Is it genetic?
Yeah.
Or is it part of your environment and upbringing? Why does this happen?
I have no idea. And they don't... Nobody knows. There's a lot of research happening on this field. And there are, like, every research... There are differences of opinion. Some people say that this is something you were born with. Some people say that we have evidence that it's only, you know, the opposite. We have evidence that you were born with it. Some people say, no, this is brought up from your environment and how you grew up. But in a way, I don't think it matters to get to a better life. It matters that you cannot abuse the child, no matter the reason for your sexual thoughts of children. To find a life where you have to live without having these thoughts is what's going to be the hardest. But before we go any further, I also want to say that I don't think our dad was a pedophile. I think he wasn't, because he had a sexual life, a very rich sexual life with adults. And I don't think he was necessarily interested in children. I haven't found any evidence. Remember when he died, our dad died in an accident, and we, you and I, went to his apartment. I was 17, you were 21, and we were the ones who had to clean up everything in his apartment. And we had a deadline, remember?
Actually, I can remember that, yeah.
People who lived there said, yeah. You need to get all this stuff out of here within this time. And you and I were alone with the trash bags, and we found tons of porn. I knew about the porn because he fed me porn as a child, but there was no adult porn anywhere. No, a child porn. Or a child, it's not called child porn.
But could
porn.
You buy child porn at that time?
There was no...
I'm not so sure.
CSAM, we call it. Child sexual abuse material. That's the correct word for
but
that.
Can but you couldn't buy that in
But
magazine.
You could have pictures of us. Do you remember he took pictures of you and me naked together before Christmas and he made us sit together? I sat in front of you and we were naked in front of the Christmas tree and my mom was really mad. And we have those pictures somewhere, and that was his julekort. And I wonder if he sent it to people as a Christmas card. This picture of you and me, and he said, God jul, and or Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And it's a picture of you and me naked.
Holy crap, I didn't know about
and
this.
And I was maybe 5 and you were like 8.
I hope you burn those pictures if you find them.
Well, I don't know where they are, but I know there are some pictures somewhere. So there, he had plenty of chances to take pictures of me, right? And share them with people or enjoy them. We don't know, of course, but I think he was using sexual or sex as an outlet of power.
But I think you also need to remember that most of the stuff he had was we threw it out without looking through it. For example, all the pictures, I just put everything in bags and threw it. We never looked through his stuff. I didn't.
Yeah, I looked through some of it, though.
Yeah, I couldn't do that because that would have probably pissed me off so much. So, but you have to remember at that time, and this is interesting because at that time, I'm not sure if I even believed your story.
Yeah.
It took years. I can actually remember one episode when I was living here in this house with my family, and there was this Norwegian TV channel
who
came visiting on the outsider.
Yeah.
I can remember I was so angry. I could have killed you.
Yeah.
Because, and this is, I think this is one of the biggest problems relating to these kind of stories. It's shame.
Yeah.
Because my shame of what had happened was something I didn't want to talk about. I didn't want people to know. I just told a very few people.
Yeah.
And the people I told, they didn't believe me,
yeah.
I think. Or they didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
So that means all this shame takes a huge amount of time to get over.
Yeah.
But now it's gone.
Yeah.
There's no more shame around this
whatsoever.
I remember
you told me this, and it took you a long time to tell me because you only told me a very short while ago that you didn't believe me when we were younger. So this is what's interesting. You told me that you remember our dad knocking on my door at night. You're the one who told me this.
This is correct. Yeah. I mean, this is okay. This
but
is
at
important.
Some point, and you heard noises. You said that were horrible to listen to. But you said that when you were so then somehow when you got older, you must have forgotten this, and then started thinking that I was lying or making it up or.
No,
whatever.
It's not about forgetting. It's not about. It's about It's about shame. You know what has happened.
Yeah.
And inside me, I knew this.
Yeah.
And even though I can't remember the details as such, I can remember what you're saying now about the sounds and the, all this shit I remember. And he was in your room every night.
Yeah, you said that.
Yeah, I remember this. And
I can't believe that.
Or remember, I think I remember. I'm not sure if I remember. Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure if I believe my own thoughts.
No, I know.
So what happened when I got older was that I just had to put all that into a box.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
The shame was way too bad.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine. Because one thing is what people were thinking about our family. That wasn't so important. But what do you think people are saying about a man who has four kids, and his dad was a pedophile molester?
Yeah.
Everybody would say that runs in the family.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
So it's not that I didn't believe it, but I couldn't believe it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that
that's
makes
two
sense.
Very
no,
different
it does
things.
Make sense.
I just had to put it in a parking space in my brain and say that this can't be true.
What's it in can't the be box? True.
But yeah, and that's what I do with everything. I put it in a box.
It's put in a box.
Actually, we have managed one question so far.
Thank you for listening. Please share your comments or questions with us at spirals@unicornvoice.com. And to learn more about trauma, go to unicornvoice.com. Now you get to listen to some of my original songs or weird demos. 12 days of summer.